Backchat Studios is a part of the Acast Creator Network. Head to backchatpodcast.com.au to sign up as a patron and access all of our merch.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Backchat Basketball Show. And again, we're having guest after guest, great people coming on board to be a part of the show. No Greg Heyer, no Ben Malice here, but Paul Smith, owner of the Sydney Kings, is here. And look, they said it couldn't happen because, you know, I'm from Perth and I didn't think Paul would want to speak to someone from Perth, but he's given up some time. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
No worries, Dan. It's good to be here, mate.
Now, if you do want to find us on Instagram, it's backchat_basketball, and you can send us an email, hello@backchatpodcast.com.au. If you send me anything, we'll probably read it out because I'm like that, and we like to have lots of questions, and that's how people get in touch with us. Let's chat NBA news in a sec, but first, before we do that, I want to hear about your greatest sporting achievement, Paul. Now, usually I speak to basketballers, so I tell them they're not allowed to tell me anything about basketball because that's sort of cheating. So for you, I'm going to give you open slather. So your greatest sporting achievement, and look, I'll say this, you can't say winning a championship with the Kings. Okay, so
Well, that's a great moment, but it's not a great sporting achievement for me.
No, personally. All right. So tell us, what's yours?
Look, it's pretty much nothing special really. Probably, you know, playing representative rugby here in New South Wales was probably up there. You know. Winning an under-9 rugby league grand final was a great thing. You know, those little things that matter. We went a whole season undefeated in the Group 7 Warilla Gorillas.
Nice.
There's a moment there, and you know, it's not a glorious thing. Shooting a low number in golf was good. All that sort of stuff.
But yeah,
I've never achieved anything outstanding in sport, you know, winning nothing like winning an NBL championship. That's for sure.
Well, look, I'm all for the lower, like the younger things that stick with you. I'm just gonna. Is it here? It is actually. Just bear with me a sec. I'll show you this. This is
right.
This is my cricketing trophy. I was under 12s, and I bowled 5 for 16 in the grand final, and that's the ball from the actual. From the actual game. So that's my greatest sporting achievement. There's nothing bad about the younger grades that stick with you your entire life, that's for sure.
See, I have a thing with it. I'll tell you a little story for what it's worth. So I'm not a great fan of sports memorabilia.
Now, right.
I say that because I work in sport. I've worked in sport my entire career. And so, you know, particularly when I was working in the United States and offices there, You know, you'd receive so many things, just so many gifts from teams and all those sorts of things. And so it became a bit cluttery, you know, bobbleheads. And, you know, it was amazing what, you know, all our staff would get gifts and all these sorts of things. It was very generous of all our clients, you know. But I'd have this thing where I'd say, well, look, it got to a point where the office was so cluttered that I said, look, you can only have three pieces of memorabilia on your desk at any one time. Everything else you can put in the pool room. And they said, what do you mean by the pool room? So I had to explain what the castle was. And so we set aside a meeting room that became a shelf space for all this memorabilia. And people would put in there. They didn't lose it. They just had to store it and bring it out seasonally and things like that. And so the only thing that I kept in my office that was any form of memorabilia was the pennant. In the old days, you used to get a felt pennant.
Yeah.
And that was the Warilla Gorillas under-9 Premier's pennant. And I used to, that was the only thing I kept in my office with all these, you know, sports coming through. and they'd look up and go, what's we're really gorillas, man, what's all that about, you know? So yeah, it's a fun memory. So I'm like, yeah, you've got a cricket ball, I've got a pennant.
I remember I called my dad, like, this it randomly came up a little while ago, like 2 years ago, about this. I remember I had this trophy and I called my dad and I was like, Dad, do you remember that cricketing trophy? And as soon as I said the word, like, cricketing trophy, I didn't even get the word trophy. I was like, yeah, I got it. Like, he was very
parents proud. Don't throw anything out. Yeah. Parents don't do that. That's a great thing about your parents. They just keep everything. Unfortunately, it can be embarrassing.
That's right. In the NBA, the playoffs are happening right now. My team, the Dallas Mavericks, as you can see over my shoulder, weren't present because, I don't want to talk about it. I've talked about it too much on this podcast. Do you have a team in the playoffs that you're backing?
We have a bit of an affiliation with the Warriors, so I just love what they do. But look, frankly, the Knicks is who I'm sort of secretly rooting for, having lived in New York and actively engaged in the Sydney New York versus Boston antics. So the Knicks are my team, and it's great to see them there. Yeah, it's terrific. Yeah.
I'm upset with the Knicks because Jalen Brunson left the Mavericks and has just been so good, and we didn't re-sign him. Poor form from the front office of the Dallas Mavericks, but that's okay. I'll get over it eventually. There's a lot of talk at the moment about banning the charge. How do you feel about that sort of chatter at the moment? Because it's been such a pivotal thing in basketball for so long.
Well, look, there's a bit in it, and of course, you know, this is like when the charge rule was introduced, they didn't account for the cunning antics of coaches and the athleticism of athletes who can put themselves into a position in an instant that creates the charge. So, look, I think, as always, it's one of those things that's interpretative to an element. You know, you could increase the charge circle. You could make it out to the keyway type of thing. That's one option, is to sort of take that out of play. But, you know, look, I think it is part and parcel of the game. And I don't think it's really impacted the NBL in that regard. It's always a bit of a debate, and of course, it seems that the referees always seem to favour the defender, not the attacker. But you know, look, it's always a bit of a conversation. This what goes on this year. It'll be something else next year. But I'm sure there'll be a tweak here and there, and the refs will change their calls. The refs will adjust a little bit. I think that's the other element. The refs have to make an adjustment as well.
Yeah, but before we get into some NBL stuff, do you have a footy team? And when I say footy, I mean proper footy, not rugby. I mean AFL.
Do I have a footy team? Yeah, look, I guess the Swans. You know, a bit of Sydney thing there, and they're our new neighbours where our offices are.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I think the Swans. Yeah, definitely the Swans. Yep. I've never really been a football lover. Never been sort of really, really hyper passionate about it, other than the Swans, if there was ever a moment to be hyper passionate. But I guess I go for that. And, you know, like, I just don't support anyone from Western Australia. That's my number one rule.
Classic New South Wales bandwagoner that just goes for a team that's going well at the time.
Of course. Giant Swans, wherever it is.
That's right.
Fine, dude. The Swans weren't real great at the weekend. I saw Tom Harley today on my way to lunch.
Yeah,
and you had to give him a hug. I said, mate, you let it go. You just got to let that go.
So there's a lot of player movement at the moment in the NBL. So obviously you're a part of that because your involvement is in the front office side of things. So for guys like – I just want to get your take on – so guys like Luke Travers, for instance, who are really young and there's a lot of promise around them. How do you think this process would be going for them when there's so much on what it seems like on the line?
Well, look, it's been an interesting free agency. It seemed like everyone just dropped their bundle. It seemed like every player, it almost felt like every player in every roster had almost been sort of allowed to go to the market type of thing. So it was really, there was a lot of bodies in motion, I must say, from our perspective. You know, we of course, we went into free agency with a fairly stable situation other than Xavier, you know, thankfully heading over to the NBA, which we're all massively happy about
being
him. And it obviously creates a change of opportunity for us as well. So we're excited by that. But we had a pretty stable situation. We just had to bed down our bench, and we did that pretty capably, I think. So we're really happy where we are there. Look, that's a tough one. With players like Luke and you know, there's a lot of players in motion. It was very interesting to see that the three sort of probably identified marquee players in free agency, you know, that two of them returned to their own clubs, which is a pretty extraordinary circumstance, with Will and with Bulls staying where they were, yep. where they stayed at home type of thing. And obviously the only change was with Keanu. So, you know, I don't know. It's I can't speak for Luke and what he's trying to achieve, but clearly, you know, obviously he has ambitions and wants to reconnect with the NBA, and that's totally understandable.
Yeah.
I you know, what's he looking for? Is he looking for role? Is he looking for responsibility? Is he looking to play in a winning program, or more importantly, is he looking to take a role in a program that may reflect what he'll be playing in the NBA if he gets a chance over there? So
yeah,
it's a tough one, and you know, that's what agents do. That's the agent's job, is to guide these guys through this process and put them in the right place. And you know, we certainly had conversations with Luke's agent about, you know, what he was looking for, and you know, I don't think we were the right place for Luke. I don't think we were exactly the right fit, and you know, he's landed at United, and I'm sure that'll hopefully be the right position for him or the right location.
Yeah.
You know, but he's got a hell of a job ahead of him right now. He's got to sort of reinvent himself a little bit, I think, and in a good way. And that's what change forces. We'll see what change does for him.
One of my favorite times in the NBA offseason is free agency. There's so much drama, and to be honest, there's so many games. So, like, you know, you sort of get tired of watching – well, not tired of watching basketball. You get tired of just, like, results. You want some, like, new stuff to happen. And I think that's why so many fans love free agency. When we watch it from afar, it looks like, you know, they're flying them in, they're whining and dining these players, you know, when they're trying to recruit them. Does any of that happen for you? Are you, like, involved in that when players are on the market? Are you speaking with them directly? No. Do you have much involvement in that?
Not really, no. I've made contact with one player in this free agency period. He didn't return my call.
Oh, brutal. Maybe he thought it was a fake.
Maybe he did, but no, it was I actually ruined this for myself. It's very much the domain of generally what happens is, and I'll generalize.
Yeah, of course.
You know, there'll be of course there's free agency and then there's pre-agency, which precedes free agency. So of course we're running depth charts across the board. You know, it's quite an involved process. Our modeling goes out 2 years, in fact, forward. So we're monitoring, you know, obviously contracted players coming up for free agency,
yep.
College are all key areas, and then a factor in imports as well. So you can imagine it's a pretty complex model at times. And you know, as things start to fall, as players start to land and contract, that can tilt or change the whole model that we're constructing. Generally, it's a direct conversations between the agent and Chris Pongrass, our CEO. And you know, that's an incredibly busy period for Chris through that period. A lot of conversations going on, a lot of tire kicking, a lot of gossip.
Yeah.
A lot of gossip. There's a lot of gossiping goes on, a lot of, you know, trying to find out where people are heading and so on and so forth. When the rubber starts to hit the road, generally then it becomes a conversation between it'd be Chris, Luke Longley, and coach.
Yeah.
Would generally engage then. That'd be the really, that's when the pitch goes. Sometimes we prepare a PowerPoint deck just to sort of visually step out where we're at. That's more the case with imports.
Yeah, right.
Aren't familiar with the country or the market or whatever. We include a lot of photos of Bondi Beach. as many, many photos as we can of good times for imports.
Yep.
But no, generally it's nothing glamorous. We don't get up on the G5 and fly somewhere and, you know, bring Tom Brady out or, you know, or Buddy Franklin or anything like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that. We're it's a pretty low rent version of all that, really.
Microsoft PowerPoint. That's all you need. Make a
PowerPoint, but you know what? It's pretty much a number.
Yeah.
It's a role. Who am I playing for? Who am I playing around?
Yeah.
And, you know, we have our pitch and we think it works pretty well. And, you know, and other clubs have their pitch as well. So, you know, we try to keep it pretty simple. We don't want to confuse players with too many moving parts. Yeah.
Yeah. talking about Xavier Cooks, you mentioned him before. How proud were you when you got to see him move over to the NBA?
Oh, I was very proud. Very proud, very emotional. You know, Xavier's from Wollongong, it's where I grew up. Gus Glover is, we're all sort of, we have this 2500 club, we're all in it. So, you know, I was very proud for him, very happy for his family. His mum and dad are lovely, lovely people. His whole family are lovely, actually. His brother lives in the United States. His sister lives in Melbourne. They're very, very close. I had dinner with his mum and dad a couple of weeks ago. He'd been over there a few weeks by that stage. And you know, I've had no contact with Xavier because, you know, he's got to get on and do his business. You know, it's not for me to be fanboying around him. So I'll catch up with him, I'm sure, in a couple of weeks when he gets back here to have a bit of recovery. But very proud, you know, just excited for him and knowing that how much it means to him and knowing truly the commitment he made to our club. What he brought to our club in the time that he was with us was immense. And, you know, frustrated me a little bit in the finals, that bit of talk that was out there about he'd be checking out or he wouldn't be sort of putting in because looking after himself. It was harebrained stuff that people were spouting. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, especially
he's an absolute champion.
Yeah, when you know him personally and you see that stuff, it would be frustrating. So how do you walk that line then of being disappointed that he's no longer on your team? Like he was the MVP of the league. So as an owner, how do you go like, well, we want these guys to succeed and leave us? Because you're essentially wanting to be so good that they're going to leave. Or I don't know, that's just an interesting balance.
Look, I came into this business without any basketball background per se. So I didn't have preconceived views of, you know, what it should be or shouldn't be. You know, I sort of play what's in front of me. And, you know, I think there's at times there's a bit of a preoccupation in the league generally about long-term stability for players being around for a long time. I don't quite buy that. I describe the NBL as an intersection league. It's a league where people are going places.
Yeah.
They're coming back, they're going up, they want to go sideways. It's not a league where you get a lot of stability, and that's reflected in a few things. It's reflected in contract terms. Generally, 1-2 years, opt-outs, options, all those sorts of things sit in there. No one's prepared to lay the numbers down for 7 years. And then on the back of that, we don't have a draft. We don't have player trades. So it drives that ongoing sort of fragility in the relationship, if you wish, or the fragility of the circumstances. So naturally, I think it's normal that players move around. And we've made it a bit of a – we stuck a – stake in the ground 5 years ago and said, look, we're going to be a club that helps people get places. I think there was a huge upside in just being a club that's known to help players and everyone in the organization move on to bigger and better things, whether that's within the NBL or if it's someone from the front office goes and works for the New South Wales Rugby League, great. That's a step forward for that person. So I don't dwell too much on the that lack of continuity, because I think change is very important as well. And so it doesn't really worry me that much. Hey, it frees up a shitload of money that we're paying Xavier. we got some money to play with right now, so don't worry about that. So you can take it that way if you wish. And so, you know, and that's business. It's just business. And Xavier's moved on to a bigger and better opportunity, and, you know, we couldn't be happier for him.
Speaking of money, sort of that list came out where each team's spend was released. As someone like it's confusing as someone who doesn't know the intricacies of how that all works. Are these numbers even accurate? Like, I don't know. I just feel like they're just numbers put together. I assume they're not. Obviously, I don't mean like in terms of accurate of how much they're spent on that that's listed there. But I assume teams are actually spending more, right? Like through loopholes and like it doesn't count under certain things. And
look, it's a bit of a dark art. I'd say notionally, the document or the reports that ESPN made by, you know, the Scoop, Olg and Ulich, the Olgs, they're there or thereabouts.
Yeah,
you know, right. Everyone will say, "Oh, it's out by a dollar," or "It's not that." Or
whatever. Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of variables in there. There's a lot of interest rate, not interest rate, excuse me. Particularly when you're dealing in, because most imports are paid by in US dollar net terms.
Yep.
Okay. So what that means is they negotiate generally a monthly or an annual salary. It's paid in US dollars net of tax. Okay.
Yep.
So the club pays the local taxes, income taxes, and then has to gross that out to US dollars from Aussie dollars. So there's always variables in exchanges. Some clubs hedge, you know, there's all sorts of ins and outs that change, go on.
Yeah.
So they're not specifically accurate, but from a speculative perspective, they're there or thereabouts. It does raise the conversation as to why don't clubs publish? I don't know. We took the view, you know, we've been always criticised at the Sydney Kings of buying championships and buying success. It can't be further from the truth.
Yeah.
It can't be further from the truth. And so we took the step last season. The previous season, so the year before, we took the step to publish one number. We published our luxury tax obligation.
Yep.
And it's at least one measure in the marketplace. I've noticed no other clubs publish that, but we're happy to publish our luxury tax commitment if it is one. And last year we didn't have one. We were under the cap, and then this year we were slightly over. But of course, in the model, there's all these exemptions around, you know, Indigenous players and Next Stars and all sorts of things. So it's a complicated formula, and I don't think anyone really knows the direct answer. But as I said, the context is, I would say, that's there or thereabouts.
Yeah, it's at least a bar that you can sort of balance against other teams and stuff. All right, let's just talk about Perth, because obviously I was joking about, you know, you don't want to talk to someone from Perth, so you're one of probably the more outspoken owners in the league. You know, there's a few that like to talk. New Zealand's one. I used to work for the Perth Wildcats, and Troy Georgiou was CEO when I was there, and he was definitely not a talker. Like he used to hate us, like, being too vocal about anything. So what is it about Perth? Like, why do you hate Perth?
Oh, it's not, it's, you know, well, let's unpack that a little bit here.
Yeah.
So let's a couple of things. Well, Troy's a CEO. Okay.
He was. Yeah.
So, yes. So, and that's no disrespect to Troy. I'm just saying that there's clearly, as employees of a club, they're quite limited to what an employee can say.
Yeah.
Okay. Chris Bongrass can't say the things I say. And I can't say the things Chris says, because we're coming at it from a different perspective. So certain liberties and opportunities are presented to you in an ownership role where you can articulate certain things, because you're not an employee of the club. You're paying the bills. So you have certain,
is that what you want?
Rights, if you use your freedom of speech, so to speak. So to an extent, the ultimate arbiter is Larry, and sometimes he doesn't like what I say. So that's okay. So, and look, my outspokenness is nothing other than an effort to create interest and conversation and debate and reaction to what is required, what we need to do to build the Sydney Kings in the Sydney market. This is a crowded sporting market in Sydney. There's 23 professional sporting teams in Sydney. 23.
That's crazy.
So good luck. And you got, what, two newspapers and three television stations and a pay TV network. So, you know, good luck trying to sort of generate any awareness if you're not prepared to put yourself out there. So, you know, and part of what I do is, you know, things I go out on a limb on are often to ensure that the players know that, you know, we've got their back.
Yeah.
We're there to defend them, and I can say things they can't say as well. So that's where I'm coming from on that. This alleged antipathy towards Perth is, you know, it's nothing more than a saga. It's the book of, you know, the book of wars that's been going on. It'll go on. It'll probably go on forever, long after I'm gone. You know, I'm frankly concerned for the Wildcats personally. I think they're bordering on irrelevance, given they're in the West and Sydney and the East Coast is now powering along in the world of basketball. I'm also concerned for the Wildcats. I think their fans are, you know, that's a shrinking population base. You know, it's hard to grow your fan base if your fans are all mad, rabid people. a lot of people won't come around to that party. You know, they don't want to go to that show anymore. So I'm just trying to throw out some lifelines to the Perth Wildcats and to help them as best I can. That's not often appreciated, but, you know, it's okay when you got two rings in 2 years. We're cool to sit back and relax a little bit and enjoy the ride. It's okay.
That's right. You could probably stop talking about the Wildcats once, you know, if they haven't made the final or the playoffs for 2 seasons now. So, look, if they are irrelevant, then it'll become boring to talk about them. So, you know, you could move on.
I'm sorry for them missing the playoffs twice in a row.
Yeah.
Great they made the play-ins, but they didn't make the playoffs.
No, it doesn't count.
I'm sorry for them for that. And, you know, that's for a proud franchise. It's that's got to be a bitter pill to swallow. But, boy, they're spending some money. Hutchie's got the checkbook out. So it's I guess they're the favourites. I would imagine right now the bookies would have them as favourites for the championship. You know,
come on.
Seriously, mate. No, I'm not, mate. Seriously, the money they've spent, it's crazy. It's good. It's fantastic. And I'm cheering them. I think it's great. I think they're just – I love it because, you know, we need that. We need someone to have a big go, and they're having a big go. It's expensive, but, you know, look, SEN's got plenty of money. They'll be fine. Okay.
You went through a process of taking over a team. So that was around, was it 2016-ish that you?
No. Wait, which one?
The Sydney Kings.
King? Well, we were approached by the then owners of the Kings in 2018. To take on a 50% shareholding in the club.
Yep.
Which we did. And then the following year, after 1 year in that situation, we then came to a mutual agreement with the remaining, the 50% owners to buy, we'd buy their remaining 50%. So
yeah.
I became a full owner in 2019.
Right. So I'm just sort of comparing that to Jack Bendad, obviously had the club for a very long time and did some amazing things for the sport as a whole and for the NBL. Yeah. And then obviously new ownership came along. So and they're having a tough time. So you went through this process yourself. Did you feel like this weight of responsibility, like, oh shit, like I better do this right because you got a lot of people that you could disappoint?
No, I didn't really. The club hadn't been going that well. It's not like we bought a club that had been rattling up championships left, right and centre. The club had been performing pretty average, actually, in fact, below average. You know, I didn't really, and again, I probably naively went into ownership of a team. As I said, naively, I didn't really have a lot of views. My strong sense was I wanted to do it my way.
Yeah.
I didn't come into this with a huge background in basketball or instinctive knowledge of the sport. I came into it I looked at it from a marketing and positioning and people perspective.
Yep.
And so what we embarked upon was an initial rebuild of parts of the business. And we then, the first decision I made, really the first meaningful decision I made as owner, was to hire Will Weaver into the role. And so that was roundly criticized. I was very surprised by the anger that was directed towards me as a result of that. People very critical of hiring an American coach, didn't like it. Hire Aussie. Americans don't know this market, don't know this league. They can't coach here.
Wow.
I live by the mantra, I zig when everyone else zags. I'll go the other way. So, you know, I think I didn't feel an obligation. And initially people were very cynical about my involvement. Of course, there's the darkest histories of this club involve firepower. And people, you know, on social media said, oh, it's another firepower. This guy can't survive.
Yeah.
They won't keep this thing going. And that stuff doesn't worry me. And in one of my messages I wrote to members when I first came on board, I just simply said, look, don't judge me by my words, judge me by my actions, and do that, please. And so I think the results speak for themselves now. So I'm not afraid to upset people. We upset people all the time in ownership because you can't please everyone.
No.
But, you know, you've got to have a vision. You've got to have a light on the hill. And honestly, all I wanted to do was win a championship. That's all I wanted to achieve. So it's so hard to do that. It's very, very hard. And I often say now, sort of jokingly, that if before we ever won a championship, I'd say, because we went so close on one occasion, I know how hard it is and the circumstances. And there's so many things can go wrong in the journey towards a championship. Injury, disruption, you name it. I think we've tasted it all.
Mm.
And I jokingly say that if you won the national championship in tiddlywinks, I'd kiss your feet. It's that hard to do.
Yeah.
So I have that much respect for anyone that can win a championship in this country in a sport, in any sport. Hats off to them.
Yeah. 2020, you sort of just mentioned that. So that was obviously the COVID year when there's a grand final series against the Perth Wildcats. That was just a whole debacle, obviously. So the Wildcats were awarded the championship after the series couldn't finish. Can you remember much? Well, not remember. Can you talk a little bit about that? About that sort of process for you?
Look, it's not very cathartic to do so. I think about it a lot.
Right. You still think about it?
Yeah. It's a pebble in my shoe. It'll never leave me ever, because on many reasons, it's not about me personally, but the players, particularly the players that were impacted, players that had never won a championship in their entire careers, who didn't get that moment to decide it. I think there was a lot of media written at that time. Some of it was very accurate and very true. It properly reflected on the circumstances. And, you know, I'm not here today to cast judgment on anyone that was involved. A lot of people that were involved aren't involved in their respective clubs now.
Yeah.
And in the organization, interestingly. I'm not that I'm take comfort from that, but, I've spent my entire career in sport, mate. I've worked in sport professionally since 1988. Most people weren't fucking born then. I've been around a long time in this industry.
Yeah, I wasn't.
And that doesn't make me feel any better.
Sorry, I was 89, if that's any...
All I'll tell you is that when you've been around as long as I have, that's 1988, I don't know what's that, 34 years,
yep.
36 years I've worked professionally in sport, made a career out of it, my entire career. And sport moves very quickly, moves very quickly at times. And sometimes you don't have the paperwork can't keep up with how fast things are moving. And things were moving very, very quickly in February and March of 2020. And the thing that I've worked all over the world in sport, and when you give your word, you tell the truth.
Yeah.
And that's it. And you don't change. And, you know, and that wasn't reciprocated in these circumstances. And so that's my one gripe.
Yeah.
That people lied. People lied in that situation. Denied conversations took place. And, of course, we didn't have time for paperwork. We didn't have time for email exchange. This was moving so rapidly. It was a moment by moment, minute by minute scenario. And so my one gripe as I reflect on it all is that my disappointment is that people did not tell the truth. And, that's the way things go. And it is what it is now. And, you know, I don't begrudge the Wildcats claiming their asterisk championship. You can have it. But I do feel sadness for the people on our side of the equation that weren't given their fair opportunity and weren't treated fairly.
When you say we'll move on after this because I want to talk about 2021, 2022, the truth wasn't told. Do you mean from the league or from Perth?
Those that lied know they lied.
Right.
That's all I'll say.
Right. Okay.
And I'm standing here today, still in my role, still doing what I'm doing, and I'm telling the truth.
Sure. Okay. Well, on the flip side of that, 2021 happened, your first championship as the owner of the Kings.
Mm.
How good were the celebrations, especially off the back of that? Because that's like such a blow to then bounce back and win. that it must be from the ultimate low to the ultimate high.
Yeah, well, we had a year in between where we had a very, you know, we were climbing, well, gosh, that year, 2020, the 2020-21 season.
Yeah. Sorry, I get confused because they count it as 2020 and the 2021. And
that's right. For simplicity, we'll say that with the 2020 finals were stopped.
Yep.
21 finals, well, we didn't even make them.
Yep.
We got caught in a real tough situation where Will Weaver got the opportunity to go and work in the NBA, and we were stranded without a coach. And again, I'm not critical of Will. That we stand by our – talk about keeping your word. I told him, I said, if you get an opportunity, I'll let you go, because that's what we stand for, letting people chase those opportunities. And he got an opportunity to put the club in a tough bind. But that's sport. Anything can drive that circumstance. And so, you know, we hired 40, and 40 had his rookie year as a coach, and that was a tough year for us, a huge number of injuries.
Yeah.
The toll was immense. And so, you know, we climbed out of that. We didn't even make the finals. We missed out by a whisker. There'd been a top six, we would have been fine, but, you know, there wasn't. So there you go. So we roll on, and then, you know, we hired Chase Buford, and so rolling into the 22 season, 22 finals, mate, it was unbelievably tough start of the season. Like, I mean, frightening. We were, I probably talk about it now, I did go to Chase's house after about, I think, six games, and I went to, because I went and spoke to him. I said, you know, very rarely do I do a house call, and I went around, we met in his living room, and, you know, we had an honest conversation about what's going on, what's happening, and, you know, and more importantly, how can we help? And he gave me some input into areas that he felt that he wasn't sort of getting a sufficient support in some areas, and or certain level of authority. We addressed that evening. Immediately calls were made. Chris Pongrass was dispatched on a visit to someone else's house to talk to them.
Right.
And because you don't have time to waste, you've got to get on with it. It's moving fast, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that conversation triggered the turnaround, but it certainly gave us a chance to have a reset. And then things just started to click, and then, you know, we just got on a roll. It was crazy. And everything that all the disasters and bad things that had been happening to us in the last couple of years prior, everything fell our way.
Yeah.
You know, everything fell our way. Jalen Adams started playing like a beast. You know, we turned things around with that monster dunk he put on Brisbane. That changed the shape of the season.
Yeah.
And then it just all started rolling. The belief was unbelievable. And look, right, and again, rolling to that finals, it was that – For my mind, the regret I have is we didn't play Illawarra in a grand final series. I thought that would have been an epic five-gamer. It would have gone to five against Illawarra. It would have been a wild ride, but it didn't work out that way. We got them in two. That was a great win down there in the semi-final. We really put them away. It was a huge win, and then we went into the finals, and then lo and behold, we couldn't believe it. Melbourne dropped the bundle and fell to Tasmania, and I think I don't know whether who was more surprised, Tasmania or Victoria or the Melbourne United guys is who got there. So we found ourselves playing Tasmania, and, you know, look, it wasn't a fair fight. Honestly, it was – we were a runaway train that year. It was pretty frightening what we were doing. And we weren't – and that's not being boastful. That's just being real about – it was a pretty hard team to stop. And so – and Tasmania made a great fist of it. But, you know, it was pretty hard to stop that team. And so in the end, it was almost like it was disbelief. I, going back to the kissing people's feet if they win the Tiddlywinks Championship, I was shocked by it. And it was an amazing run, and, you know, hiring guys like Ian Clark in and just seeing players grow like Xavier, you know, it just all happened. It was just one of those great moments, and the team was so bonded and so together, and It was just wonderful. It's heartwarming to think about it, you know. But it was a bit of a parade we were putting on in the end. It was amazing. It's incredible.
Going into then this past season, trying to go back to back. You talk about how hard it is to win one. It's obviously incredibly hard to go back to back. I try to stay pretty neutral, especially like sort of doing the podcast, and I work, yeah, you know, in sports and stuff. So I try to stay pretty neutral, but I feel like I only had like one gripe with the Sydney Kings this season was that, and I'll just be frank, I felt like there was this like fake us against them thing that you guys were trying to push, that was like nobody believes in us and everyone's against us. But, like, I don't think that was that, like, a deliberate thing that you guys did to try and, like you said, get interest in the team, interest in the NBL? Like, how legitimately did you believe that people didn't think you guys were good enough to win?
Do you really think people don't hate the Sydney Kings?
Oh, I think people hate the Sydney Kings, but I think everyone knew you were the best. You lost, like, six games.
This year?
Yeah, this year. But it was, like, this whole lead-up, like,
Jose.
Oh, no, people don't think we're good enough to win.
Hang on. I woke up in the start of the season, and the Adelaide Warriors were the hot thing, and then Brisbane were the hottest ticket, and you know, we were just like, oh, we've had to wipe the roster, you know, the overtime clowns are all shitting on us, you know, we're rubbish, whatever, you know. You hear all that stuff and you just go, all right, well, that's cool, whatever, you know. And we were never overtly confident at the start of the season. Yeah, you know, we're very respectful of a season start. You just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Look, this is it. It's a pretty shallow, you know, squad you've got. A couple of injuries and sideways, yeah, your season's over, you know. That can happen. So we were never in that mode of saying, look, we've got this, they're all kidding themselves. But I won't say we weren't offended by it. There was a lot of disrespect. I think it was by promoting other teams and talking other teams up in the manner that they were, I think simply disrespected what we were doing.
Yeah.
So no, we were there was a genuine consciousness of that, and that only sort of rolled on further and further as the season went on, I think. And look, we know we're the biggest drawing team on away games in the league.
Right.
We know people come out to watch and hate the purple, and I love that. I'm okay with that. Pay your money, you can have your go, but you know, but be respectful of what we're doing. And you know, people confuse our, there's a sense out there sometimes I get that, you know, we're arrogant. It's pride. People, please understand, there's no arrogance here, but we're the Sydney Kings. We're not going to be pushed around. We're not the Violet Crumbles, right? I do believe there's a sense in the league that they just prefer Sydney to go back to what it used to be. You know, the team that couldn't make it could fake it, but couldn't make it. You know, well, we don't fake it. We actually make it. And so that'll never change. And that's this is what you see is what you get now. And so like it or not like it, it's okay. But, you know, at least there's a black hat out there somewhere to fight, you know?
Yeah. A couple more things and I'll let you go. And it's Monday night and probably other things you want to be doing. That sort of touches on, I think, NBL media as a whole. Like, you know, they're very, what I find is, you know, you don't have to say this, but I find it's very insular, and they control a lot of what comes out. You know, they write their articles and they've got their podcast and their talk show or whatever. And so that basically almost whatever they say goes. You know, if they're saying the Sydney Kings aren't good enough, then people just believe it because there's not enough coverage in the league. But that leads to a problem in that, you know, certain writers, or like writers are on payroll. So like they just, they're employed by the league to write certain things. Yeah. Do you see that as like a problem, or like, and how do you fix that?
Well, look, it's not peculiar to basketball.
Yeah,
all the major sports, the AFL have specialised in AFL media.
Yes,
you know, if you talk, people I talk to in general media, you know, get angry that, you know, the AFL drops its exclusives to itself. Right?
Yes.
So this is a function of the new regime of media coverage, of the fact that sport, yeah, generally speaking, media is a shrinking model, and you know, traditional media, print is an example. There's a proliferation of radio, I think, but generally speaking, those very influential, very considered, very mainstream media platforms such as print is a dying breed in that regard. And they're all more and more focused on clicks and, you know, all sorts of things. They're not selling papers anymore. They're selling content. So it's a general malaise. And so I wouldn't isolate the NBL and say that that's a problem. But I will say this about basketball. One of my theories on the growth of or the current state of the NBL and the state in the last 10 years. And people, I constantly get this, you know, particularly in Sydney, oh, the entertainment centre, the good old days, the 90s, it was never better. It was the greatest. You know, look, I get that. But in those days, there was no pay TV. There was no internet. You couldn't watch the NBA. You might get a snippet here or there. You might get the odd game. But, you know, therefore, people had to focus on the game of basketball they could consume, and that was the NBL. Then the NBL, and therefore there was a lot of coverage around it, a lot of media. In those days, a lot of newspapers. There was a lot of paid journalists that did a lot of things. There was no podcasts. There was nothing like that. It was, you know, that was where people got their information from. So it's almost like a perfect storm where you had a changing media landscape, but also the NBL fell in a hole as a league in, you know, through that period, 2000s, wherever it was, before Larry sort of reinserted himself into the ownership of the league. It was a very low period. And that not only impacted, you know, fan bases and things like that, it meant that there was less interest from journalists. Mm. So I believe that generations of journalists were lost, that they just stopped writing about basketball, callers, a whole range of things happened that made the referees, I'm sure referees walked away from the league, they couldn't make a living. Administrators, bench officials, it really impacted the continuity of the knowledge and expertise associated with the game. And the exciting thing that's happening now is we are in a new media landscape, and of course the NBL has got to go out and says what it says, because it's got to drive some action and drive some interest. And there's people consuming that, but podcasts like this, as much as it goes against my principles to appear on a West Australian podcast, I'll do so. You know, but you know, I think you can. It's not fair to be, you know, particularly critical of the NBL in isolation. Hey, don't worry, Liam Santa Maria and I and Corey, we have our. Well, I definitely have conversations with Liam. Corey won't come near me. He won't go near me. But but Liam and I have at it. Don't worry. And I speak to the league officer. I don't like something, I'll let them know on Twitter and to their face. I'll tell them straight. But I don't think it's peculiar to the NBL. I think it's a construct of the current nature and the way that sport is being marketed, promoted, and communicated. And it's certainly a sanitization. And I think to some extent, the NBL, if anything, skews to be less sanitary than other leagues. A lot of leagues don't want stuff written. They don't want certain things said and spoken about. They don't want controversy. At least the NBL is prepared to sort of let it fly a little bit and put some stuff up to see what happens. And I don't like sometimes some of it. I don't like it, but, you know, that's okay. They're doing their job. And if they're not writing about it, I don't know who else will.
Yeah, great. But,
you know, that's where we are.
All right, I've got just a couple of listener questions and then we'll wrap this up. Okay, first one's from Jacko McDonald. He says, origins around the Hawaiian shirts, and do you have a favorite?
Okay, right. Okay, the Hawaiian shirts are not a thing for me, right? So what happened was, the origins of that is I don't really own colourful shirts, but I was in New Zealand. I was in Auckland once, and I went to a shop and I saw this really interesting shirt. I bought it. Anyway, put it away, and then Andrew Webster from the Sydney Morning Herald wanted to do a piece on me on a game day. So he said, oh, you know, well, I'll spend the day with you. So he met me at home, and we drove out to the arena and spent the day. And I just happened to throw this shirt on. It was a hot day. I put the shirt on.
You're feeling colourful.
They had a couple of photographs in the paper, and then suddenly it became a thing. And then, so in fairness, I don't look. That's me, black, right? Yeah. But I don't wear them any other occasions than in the arena. And then, you know, now they have become something that I wish it wasn't the case, but it is the case. Do I have a favorite? Anything we win in, I'm very, very, very superstitious.
Really? So, okay.
If we lose and I'm wearing something, shoes, socks, anything, it has to be washed several times before I wear it on the game day. But one of our sponsors, she came up to me. She sits near me at games, and she came up and she gave me this sort of paper sack. And I didn't know. She often brings me, you know, baklava and, you know, things. And I opened it up, and there was all these colourful materials in there. I pulled it out, and there were four shirts. And they're unbelievable. They're the best things ever. One of them I won't wear because it's got a photo of me on it. But There's ones with Hoops Capital and Sydney Kings and all that sort of stuff. So that became the – they don't fit or anything like that. They were way too big, but I just go, look, I'm just wearing them anyway. So, so that's the story there.
Good. That's good. This is from Cooper Yates. Oh, wait. How does it feel to construct a back-to-back championship team?
It's awesome.
Can you do it again? Good.
Well, you know what? Back-to-back's been done. Three-peats have been done. What about a four-peat? Imagine that. Imagine a four-peat.
Is that what you're, that's what you're going for, a four-peat? I mean, you have to say you're going to try it every year.
Every owner says they're going to win. Yeah, I had a conversation once with an owner, and he said, Smithy, we're going to win the championship this year. And I sort of stepped back, and I said, are you real? This is in the off-season.
Yeah.
I said, mate, I just, look, congratulations, all the best. And, yeah, no, it didn't happen. But, no, it was great. Look, this year was incredible. I must say it was far more rewarding this year, this one, because of the back-to-back nature of it. But literally we were at various times through the season, we were at particular back end, we were like hanging onto the glass with our nails. It was that we're just clawing on, holding on as hard as we could. It was a death ride at the end. It was breathtaking at the end. It was not like the previous one, which we were sort of just smashing everyone. This one was frightening. Yep. It was a hell of a ride, but it was great. It was amazing, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. All right, Paul. Well, thank you so much. I know it took every iota of, you know, your being to appear here.
No, that's all right. Look,
this is a basketball show. It's not the Perth Wildcat show. This is purely, you know, last week we spoke to Ryan Brokoff. No. The week before we spoke to Shane Hill. So, look, that's fine. So I really appreciate you giving up some time. Look, I'll say this. Right. Good luck for this year.
Thank you. Back to back.
When you're in Perth, please wear that Hawaiian shirt with your face on it. Please.
All right. For you, I will, Dan. And when I get criticized, I'll say, blame him. Don't blame me.
Very good. The Backchat Basketball Show is on Instagram, which is backchat_basketball. You can send us an email, hello@backchatpodcast.com.au. Episodes come out every Wednesday next week. Not sure who's going to be here, but I'm sure it'll be someone as good as Paul or better. Man. Come on. And
Not hard. That's not hard.
I will chat to you another time, and I'll see you in Perth.
All right. Good on you, mate. Thank you. Thanks, mate.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That episode from Backchat Studios lives on the Acast Creator Network. If you want to sign up as a patron or access all of our merch, head to backchatpodcast.com.au.